It's funny because right now we're doing an exercise with our team to try and, you know, some things that you've been talking about on your other episodes, like create some templates, create the tiers, just streamline decision making around what will this product launch look like, which is a very useful exercise. However, I would say during pricing and packaging, it just all goes out the window.
Hey, I'm Cody Bernard, and you're listening to Getting to Market, a show that gives you an inside look into what it takes to successfully launch a new product. In each episode, we'll chat with go-to-market leaders about how they go to market, covering the tools, tactics, and tricks that they use so you can take your own product launches to the next level. My guest today is Julia Zatar, Senior Product Marketing Manager at Loom. Today's episode is brought to you by theproductlaunchmasterclass.com. This is the product launch course for product marketers that need help transforming their launches into their CEO's favorite marketing weapon. It was created by my former colleague, Dan Murphy. Dan ran product marketing at Drift and is now running brand and product marketing at Privy. Over 150 product marketers have taken the course and learned Dan's proven launch framework. You can check out their reviews of the course at theproductlaunchmasterclass.com. Now, the course normally costs $99, but because you're a listener of Getting to Market, you can get it today for only $59. All you have to do is use a promo code GETTINGTOMARKET, all one word, all caps. Again, that code is GETTINGTOMARKET, all one word, all caps. Visit theproductlaunchmasterclass.com right now to get this course. So with that, let's get into today's interview. I'm here with Julia, Senior Product Marketing Manager at Loom. Julia, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. Excited to be here.
Really excited to have you on. This is probably one of my, or going to be one of my favorite interviews that I've had so far, just given the product that you guys are building over there at Loom. One of the favorite things that I've had over the last year, specifically with all of the Zoom fatigue, if I can cut out any meetings and just send, you know, a quick video update of what I'm working on or something that somebody else needs to know, I just hop on, record a video and send it. And it's been super valuable.
Glad to hear it. And I feel high pressure now.
No, don't feel high pressure. It's super laid back conversation. And I'm super excited to uncover how you guys go to market, specifically with such a successful product that you guys have had over the last few years. So yeah, let's get into that. So for anybody that doesn't know, what does Loom do?
Yeah, so I would say simplest way to describe it is we are a video messaging platform for work. So imagine you have something complicated that you need to explain, or you need to walk through a project brief, maybe just give a status update, and you don't want to schedule a meeting about it because either scheduling is just difficult because there are five people involved, or you just can't find time. You know, you need to get this done by Thursday. So you can record a Loom, which is recording your screen, a little cam bubble, your voice walking through your document or whatever's on your screen, maybe a design. And, you know, instantaneously you get a URL of that video. So there's no uploading or downloading, and you can drop that into wherever you're already communicating. So it could be Slack, it could be email, it could be another, you know, Microsoft Teams, anywhere that you're already working, or even embedding it like in Notion or Confluence, for example.
Yeah, I've just seen nothing but amazing things about Loom. I know you guys have had massive growth over the last few years, and I've been a huge admirer of your product marketing. So what is product marketing's role at Loom?
Good question. So we have two product marketers on the team. We both actually started literally a year ago on January 6th. So it's our 1 year anniversary today. I would say because we are a small and mighty team, we do a lot of cross-functional work. So, you know, we obviously help take products to market with launches, which is kind of what we're talking about here today. But we also do a lot of other work. So working on the website, working on our messaging kind of more at the corporate level a little bit as well, because we don't have someone dedicated to that at this stage. But mostly really working closely with the product team. And we're, you know, we're trying to, I think sometimes we can default to thinking that product launches is all that product marketers do, but we're trying to influence the organization to loop us in earlier in the process. And we've had some good traction already, chatting with the product manager and the product designer at the conception phase to kind of get the customer, you know, to be the voice of the customer in the room during those conversations. So I would say we're kind of involved at the beginning, then we take a step back while it's being built and, you know, product design is really getting into the nitty gritty. And then we come back again during the product launch phase.
Yeah, I've always felt that that was such a, it depends type of part of product marketing where you can either be involved super early on, help kind of facilitate what goes into the product roadmap, or you play a role in a much later stage where it's like, okay, great, product has told us what they're bringing to market. Now this is where they tag us in and we quarterback that to completion.
Yeah, definitely. And when we talk a little bit more about the launches, this specific one, we were involved at the beginning. We're not always involved because we're still a small company getting our processes perfect. But so we do a little bit of both, I would say.
Yeah, actually, that's a perfect segue. So the conversation that we're going to have today is about something that I've yet to talk to anybody about on the podcast, and something that is probably one of the most interesting and impactful things that you can work on in product marketing, which was a launch of new pricing and packaging along with a brand update. So I would love to hear more about that launch. How did you go about doing that? Like, what was kind of the forcing function to get to the point where you guys said like, hey, we need to go and do this?
Yep. So a little bit of history of Loom is that we started out as a product, you know, it was always aimed at the workplace, but we started out very much with a bottoms up strategy. And we still have that baked in, but what the way we had packaged our product early on is we had a free version and a pro version. So it was called Basic and Pro. So Basic was completely free with some limits around the amount of videos that you can record. And then Pro was $10 a month for anyone that wanted like more videos. And what we found over time is that, you know, we learned about our own product in the sense that at the end of the day, Loom is a communications tool, and it's very much about two-way communication. You can, of course, use it in a more broadcast way. That's a one-directional, you know, like an update from the CEO to the company. But where it really sings is in a back and forth kind of way. And what we found organically is that people, as you know, people were adopting this within organizations, they were really using it within their teams. So like design teams were using it to talk to engineering. Marketers were using it when talking to brand about the website. Salespeople were using it with their, you know, in amongst their team and with their external customers. And so we realized like this is a team-oriented product and companies want to use this. You know, because we are asking for a change in behavior with Loom. So as people realize the value and how you can really use it, you know, on a daily, weekly basis, we realize that we need to start building features that are a little bit more enterprise. So we made that decision, I think, even before my time in 2019. And in May, we launched the beta of our business and enterprise plans.
So did that bring you guys to four plans total? Or is it three? Or did you rebrand in the middle tier? How did that work?
It's a really good question. I'm glad you asked it. So initially we had planned to keep all four. We had Basic, Pro, and in our minds that was going to continue to serve our existing user. The users that are more kind of using it in an individual way. And then we were going to introduce business and enterprise to cater to this like audience that wasn't fully satisfied with Basic and Pro. So when we launched the beta in May, we had four plans. We had Basic, Pro, business and enterprise. So with the new business and enterprise plans, we also made some major changes to the product, which were this workspace, idea of a workspace. So when you become a more of a power user of Loom, you start to want to revisit Looms. And so we introduced this idea of a workspace that has a personal library, a shared library, and a team library. And so you could start to organize your content as you accumulate it over time. So our original plan was to, you know, launch the beta in May. And then when we launched to general, we were going to also migrate our basic and pro users to starter and professional, the new version of those plans, and introduce the idea of this workspace to them as well. However, in the middle of planning for this launch, we made a big strategic decision, business decision. And that's where I would say, as a product marketer, I was involved in helping, you know, we were like, how is the market going to react to this? And so we were involved in the decision-making process, which was like a business decision.
So what was the driving factor behind that decision? Was it like a ton of the feedback that you guys got through the beta program? Was it more of like, no, look, we crunched the numbers where we want people to naturally go through this evolution of upgrade from free to business to enterprise, right? Like, we just saw a much easier transition for those users. What was that driving force that drove that decision?
Good question. So yeah, so we're in the middle of planning, you know, the launch for the two extra ones. And what we realized is, I would say it's a combination of everything that you just said. So on one hand, it was just, we thought it was overcomplicated. Like, four plans, it's too complicated. We want, our product is simple. These plans are very complicated, and we want the buying decision to be simple. So that was just like high level one reason. The other reason was, actually, rather than kind of any feedback that we got from customers, it was that we realized the future of Loom is to be using it in a team. And so, exactly as you described, we want to be setting that behavior even at the entry level free plan. And so we want people thinking of like using Loom in a team, even at the free level. And the thing is, like, if you want to use it somehow, you know, by yourself, or you're a freelancer and you just want to send videos to your customer, you can still use the free plan and that will work for you. But we wanted to kind of, it's like an education moment to have people thinking about Loom in a team setting.
Yeah. And how did that work internally when working with the cross-functional teams on trying to allocate different features to those specific plans, where that would create a very nice kind of upgrade flow for those users?
Yeah, so the questions that we were asking ourselves is, you know, what are our levers? And we had a few at the time. It's like amount of videos, length of videos, and then the amount of people you can have in the workspace. And the thing is, we didn't have any really good data to fully understand which is the right lever. And so we created several. And the main one and the biggest change was the 5-minute limit on the starter plan. And then we had like 25 creators on the starter plan, 100 on business, and unlimited on enterprise. And we quickly saw, you know, if we think about what the metrics for this change were, from a business perspective rather than a marketing perspective, one of them was like, will this influence revenue? And, you know, we, of course, and as a marketer, we were like, how are people going to react to this? We have a lot of loyal customers. And of course, we had some people say, this is frustrating, but we had a lot of people say, this is frustrating, but we love Loom. And hey, $8 a month, if I get the annual plan, is great value. And we had a lot of people upgrade. So we discovered that the main lever is the 5-minute limit.
Yeah, I was going to say, I feel like with videos like that, you want to keep them short to keep people's attention. But when you think about kind of inter-company communication, those videos aren't necessarily going to be short as they would be with your prospects and customers. So naturally, you're going to exceed that 5-minute threshold, especially if you're recording something on the lines of like a walkthrough of a new product design, or maybe a product demo, or even just recording a meeting, right? So I think like that's a really, really interesting way to figure out what that lever was that people would upgrade for. Now, taking a step back a little bit, when you thought about the overall process of this pricing and packaging launch, how did you go and set the project plan? Like, was beta something that was always going to be a part of it, and the project plan started from there, or did it start much earlier on, like you were mentioning, in 2019?
Yeah, I would say, I would call it like, it was a very phased approach. So we didn't know, you know, at the beginning of the year that we would be ready in May and then we would be ready in October. So I'm sure all product marketers will relate to the fact that no one will give us a solid date that they can stick to. And there was a lot of complexity involved because we were doing, in the back end, we were doing a migration, and we didn't want that to fall over when we did it. So the beta was like very easy to launch from a technical perspective because it was new and then we had like a small amount of customers. But when we did the GA, that was a lot more complicated because not only are we launching new plans, we have to migrate our existing customers. And so there's a lot of communication that goes into that. So to specifically answer your question, I wouldn't say that we had a plan in January with a nice cadence. It was like iterative. So let's just launch the beta. We knew in our minds at that time that we wanted to, that, you know, we were going to migrate our basic and professional users, but then we ended up changing like our strategy between the beta and the general. So I would say it was three phases. We generally knew we were moving up market. We planned for the beta and then we like, it was a new project to launch the GA.
Yeah. Timelines are always incredibly tricky, especially when it comes to launching new products. And I think, I mean, you basically just, you let your customers guide you in the right direction of when it was the right moment to kind of go GA with this new pricing model. So if you think about, I actually want to dig deep quickly into this process of migrating customers and the beta program itself. Were you only focusing on net new customers, people that were just buying or people that were just signing up, or were you kind of opening it up to your existing customer base as well? And how did you manage that process? I feel like that could get really messy early on because you might have two conflicting messages out, one in the market and then the other to your existing customers who you're looking to get more money out of, but also provide more value too, right? And that's always kind of a weird conversation of trying to make sure that you're communicating that effectively.
Yeah, so I would say we did two things. We looked at our data and we saw where there were clusters of people in companies using Loom and we reached out to them. So it was like a proactive sales motion to bring them into the beta, but we did open it up as well. So we had a lot of inbound because as we were saying, like we already saw signal that people, there was demand for this, especially from like a security perspective, right? That's when people are like, okay, we have to pay for this because we want admin features essentially.
Sign on, all of that stuff.
Exactly. So we did some outreach to have people join. We actually had an alpha that was completely private. So that was like customers that we were already talking to and we did some outreach looking at clusters. Then the beta was, we opened it up to the public in the sense that it was on the website, but we had like an intercom bot to request access and we handpicked people so that we could like manage that process. So we didn't have a huge volume. So that's how we handled that.
Got it. Yeah. I think that makes a ton of sense. You don't want to open the floodgates because then you're kind of digging yourself into a pretty big hole that you might not be able to get out of. So I think that's really, really interesting. So who did you work with most on this new pricing and packaging release? Like I'm assuming everybody, but like who were your main stakeholders?
Yeah, it was really a truly full court press, especially because we wrapped the rebrand into this. So we literally had every part of the business involved, but I would say there was probably a core group of us. It was interesting, actually. It started out as a kind of product marketing biz ops project, and then it merged into product marketing and product. So, yeah, it was, I would say, mostly with product, but then because there was so many parts to this, the migration engineering was having to drive that, right? It was a very technical project. So we had like an engineering lead on it. The rebrand was kind of driven by brand marketing. And we were, you know, as a product marketer, we were also redoing the website at the same time as kind of focusing on the actual pricing and packaging page and launching the pricing and packaging. So it's really hard to say like who the main people were. I would, you know, we worked with product design a lot as well when we were thinking about packaging and how we lay things out. But I would say product and engineering and then like the executive as well, because it was a business, big business decision. So,
Yeah, I was going to say, so you probably had your hands pretty full during that entire process.
Yeah, it was a pretty intense launch.
Yeah, so I've done that like once or twice in my career, not like a full pricing and packaging like overhaul, but to a point where you're shifting a few features around and it just gets really messy really quick. And I think like, unless you're working with a bunch of different people to help accomplish it, you're not going to be able to do it by yourself. You need to be able to work with product. You need to work with finance. You need to work with sales and CS on the enablement side so they can go and talk about this stuff to customers and prospects. It's like, to your point, a full court press where everybody needs to be very much involved and very much knowledgeable about why you're doing it.
Exactly. So yeah, we had a lot of like just internal updates. You mentioned sales. So we were kind of, you know, even more so than help doing sales enablement in the sense like, this is how you should position, you know, these packages. It was more like, this is what we're actually doing. This is how we're changing the product, because it was just updating people on like all the fast decisions that we were making.
Yeah, it's like, we're not just increasing the price from $8 to $10. It's like, no, we've added three features, removed two, and now they don't work the same. And it's like, you need to have, hopefully people can understand that and that entire, and what goes into that entire process.
Exactly. And we wanted to share the context of why we had made these decisions. So we were kind of doing that as well.
Did you share that stuff externally too? Was there any sort of like, here's why we're doing this? Or did you let sales and CS handle those conversations as they came in?
Good question. During the actual launch, we wrote a very long blog post because when we were thinking about who is the audience for this launch, it was very broad. You know, in many ways, initially it started out as our existing customers. It was really about change management and making sure that we, you know, kept our loyal customers happy because they're the ones who are, you know, our existing customers and have been with us a long time. So if you read our blog post, it's probably mostly angled at like managing expectations with our existing customers, even though we knew that obviously this is also a moment for us to talk to new customers as well. So I don't think during the process we were proactively communicating with our customers from a marketing perspective. Our sales team was very much hand-holding. You know, the customers that agreed to do the alpha and the beta, they were fully aware that we are still like figuring things out, and we're getting feedback on the pricing and how we had structured things and packaged the features.
Yeah, I was going to say, I actually respect that a ton. I feel like if you can set expectations publicly, you're not hiding from anything, because a lot of companies will go out and they'll do pricing changes or pricing increases, not say a single thing. And all of a sudden you see on Twitter that they're getting blasted for it. And it's just, it's never a good experience. Everybody loses, both the company and both the customer. So I think what you guys did, that's a perfect way to go about doing it, because at least you're stating your reasons on why, and you're taking a stance. And I think people respect that.
Yeah. Yeah. And one of the things, like, because we ended up removing that middle, one of the middle tiers, we actually gave a lot more value in the middle, plan. So we were kind of like hoping people would be happy to hear that although we had introduced the 5-minute limit, if you did upgrade, you get a lot more in that for that $10 per month price, or $8 if you're on the annual.
Right. No, I think that makes a ton of sense. And I think that you guys handled that perfectly. So how did you go about setting goals for this launch? I'm assuming that there had to have been upgrade revenue or net new revenue associated with it. How did you go about setting goals, and what were those goals, without taking financials too much into the details here?
Totally. I think there was two main things. One was, again, like making sure that our existing customers are happy. So we spent a lot of time thinking about how do we message these changes. One, from a keep our customers happy, but also make sure they're not confused. Because again, in the background, it was pretty confusing. There was a lot of things happening. And if you, without confusing everyone, you know, we had four plans, but there were actually six at one point, because we ended up, the two plans that we released in May, we ended up repackaging them a little bit when we got rid of one of the plans. So there was actually like six cohorts that we had to think about, like, how do we communicate to these six different groups, these changes? And the whole goal was to simplify. So you know, as internally, you're like, oh, this is very complicated. But to each individual, you want to make it a very simple change. So I think one of the goals was, like, you know, NPS, how many negative tweets do we get? How many, you know, how, et cetera. And pleased to say that it was, like, very minimal. And then the other one was revenue. Like, will this actually move the needle in terms of revenue?
Yeah, I think that's super interesting. So you had six cohorts of customers with four packages they could possibly use, and there's a ton of overlap. So that actually is a perfect segue into my next question. What was the communication strategy? Like, how did you go about communicating with these customers? I think we talked about earlier, like, sales and CS at launch held a lot of those conversations, but did product marketing play any role in any of the initial outreach, letting them know what was happening? And what did that look like?
Yeah, so we kind of started, I worked very closely with the PM on the project to figure out, like, initially we were just like, what are the cohorts? So we spent a lot of time just, like, listing them out. And there was even more complexity than the six, because there's, like, people who signed up before this date when we made this change, whatever, et cetera. And an internal goal of this change was also just to simplify everything for ourselves as well as our customers. So initially it was like, who do we need to communicate to? And a lot of my effort was focused on how do we communicate this to our existing customers? So it was like figuring out who are we talking to, or who is impacted, and then what is the impact on that particular group? So that was, like, there was a lot of mechanics kind of, not even like, you're not even doing messaging at that point. You're just trying to figure out, like, who do I talk to and what do I need to say? And I had, like, a matrix of, these are the groups, these are the changes that they'll experience. How many positive and or negative, you know, changes are they receiving? How might they react? And then there was, like, a messaging exercise. Okay, how are we going to communicate, like, that actually most people are getting a ton more value? And so in the end, like, if you want to talk specifically about mediums and stuff, we just, you know, email and in-product messages were the kind of two ways that we communicated to our customers. And we had, like, a big blog post as well to summarize everything that was aimed at, like, existing. And then if new people stumbled upon it, they were able to see it as well.
What do you think worked better, the in-app or the email communications? I'm always torn because a lot of the time people don't see in-app, or they see it and they just X out and you don't know if they got the message that you were trying to get across.
It's a really good question. We did both because we were like, this is important information, and we didn't feel like it was going to be spammy since it's such a big change. So we had, like, a pretty high open rate for emails, standard around 30%. And then, in-app messages was all, I don't remember off the top of my head the actual numbers, but we had pretty good conversion on in-app message as well. But we had it set up intelligently, so if they had opened the email, they wouldn't see the message.
That's awesome.
We're using Intercom, so we only surfaced the message if they hadn't opened the email.
And vice versa? Or did it not matter? You wanted them to...
No, we used email as the primary because we were like, this is such a big change. We want there to be a record for our customers, you know? And so then, but then if they didn't open the email after a certain amount of time, we surfaced the message.
Got it. Okay. Yeah. I think that makes total sense. And I think, like, I always leverage email because, to your point, like, there is a paper trail in case you do need that later down the line. So I mean, in-app always is my preferred mechanism of how I like to get any sort of product update, but maybe that's just the product marketing person in me and just, like, always being on the front lines of that stuff.
I'm the opposite. I'm like a product marketer that never reads anything. I'm always, like, Xing out of everything.
Really?
So I like to make everything succinct and, like, easy to consume because I'm like, I'm just using the product. I don't want to read this right now, you know?
And that's interesting because it goes against everything that you're doing as a product marketer, hoping people actually read the stuff that
exactly out there.
That's awesome. So looking back, what would you say is one of the biggest challenges that you had bringing this new pricing and packaging update to market?
I would say that there was a moment when we realized that this is an opportunity to talk to new customers. And we didn't, it seems obvious, right? But because of how the project progressed, and initially it was just like going to be mostly, you know, we were very like wrapped up in the migration and that kind of thing. And so I think we probably missed a little bit of an opportunity to make more noise with, you know, we did all the things, of course, like we did Twitter, we did LinkedIn, we did a blog post, but we didn't do any like proactive kind of communication. Like we didn't do press and we didn't do, you know, other proactive communication to use it as an opportunity to meet new customers. Obviously on the sales side, yes, but not from a marketing side. So I think, yeah, because there was so much complexity, when we realized that it was close to launch date, and we made some changes. So like, I think we, you know, reworded the blog a little bit, and we, I think we even reached out to press, but it was just like, it was too late because you know how long those things take. So I think, yeah, the most challenging thing was really like nailing down who is the audience for this launch, because it was multifaceted. And then, you know, we haven't talked much about the rebrand that we wrapped up into this. And that's like an interesting question as well. Like who is the audience for a rebrand? We were very passionate about the rebrand, but we also didn't want to just make an announcement just about a rebrand because, you know, our brand team doesn't believe that's, you know, we're trying to create value for our customers, not just say, oh, we rebranded. So yeah, I would say like nailing down who the audience was, and then, you know, if we had realized earlier, we could have probably made a bigger splash to use this as an anchor to like talk to new customers.
Yeah, I feel like your priorities were right though. I mean, you want to make sure that you're delivering the best possible experience for your current customers, because those are the people who are already giving you their money. Where like you post-launch can definitely still talk about the Loom for Enterprise, right? Loom for Business. Like you can still make a big deal about that in a launch 2, 3, 4 months down the road. You don't necessarily need it to be the lead or like the headline of your new pricing and packaging update. So I think you guys were definitely still thinking of it in the right way.
True. Yeah. That makes me feel better.
Well, what would you say would be one piece of advice that you could give to somebody who's going to be going through a pricing and packaging update or a new pricing and packaging launch?
Yeah, I would say it's funny because right now we're doing an exercise with our team to try and, you know, some things that you've been talking about on your other episodes, like create some templates, create the tiers, just streamline decision-making around what will this product launch look like, which is a very useful exercise. However, I would say during pricing and packaging, it just all goes out the window because it's so specific to your situation in that very moment that there is no playbook for it. And you have to just, I mean, obviously you can use your prior experience and et cetera, but there is no like template that you can use for this because your cohorts are going to be different. Your levers are going to be different. Your customers are going to be different, et cetera. And so you just have to be comfortable with like, we have to figure this out, you know, almost from first principles in a way.
No, that's really good advice. I'm so glad you said that because all the questions that I typically use for these interviews, I had to throw out the door because this wasn't a traditional launch. And I definitely wasn't like thinking that it was going to go down this linear path. But I mean, we just talked about a bunch of things that weren't on the list of questions that I sent you before this. So I'm super happy because that just makes me feel a lot better. And I agree wholeheartedly. When it comes to anything that's just not a traditional product launch, there really is no playbook for it. And yes, leveraging the experience that you have, but also just the people within your company who have done this before, or at least have some point of view on it, is the best thing that you can do in that case.
Yeah. And our VP of marketing had done one of these before. So he kind of, you know, he knew the things that we need to anticipate and the questions we need to ask, but it's not like we reused what he had done before. for this one. So that was definitely helpful, but it was good to just think about it, you know, within the world of Loom.
Right. Well, Julia, thank you so much for coming on the show. I really appreciate it. I've learned a ton, and I'm so glad that I finally got to talk about pricing and packaging on this podcast. I know people are going to find a ton of value from it.
Thanks for having me, and this was fun.
Thanks for listening to this week's episode of Getting to Market. If you like today's show, hit the subscribe button and tune in every Thursday to hear from more marketing pros on how they run their product launches. I'll see you on the next episode.